Welcome to the Dealmakers Coffee Break. I'm Asaf Raz. Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of the Dealmakers Coffee Break Edition. This is actually the post season two episodes because we just had so many great people that we wanted to talk to. So we're kind of adding more episodes to the season as we go. They're probably going to season three pretty soon. Today I have a very special guest. It's always a special guest, but today John has been, this is John Kassman from Kassman Capital Group. I've been wanting to talk to this guy for a while and we had our back and forth, but finally we're here. So John, please take it away. Let our audience know who you are, what you do, and we'll continue from there.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you for having me today. My name is John Kassman. As you said, I am a multifamily investor and syndicator based in Cincinnati, Ohio. Strong ties to the Midwest. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. I lived in Chicago for about 8 years. Here in Cincinnati now, went to school in Dayton, lived in Detroit. And really, I am a former corporate executive. I spent 15 years in marketing, doing advertising and marketing campaigns. And really, the big thing for me was I wanted to figure out how to protect myself, my financial future. So I turned to real estate investing, particularly with apartments. It took some time to scale and grow, but ultimately we have been able to build a business to partner with other busy professionals to invest in over $100 million worth of apartments.
That's beautiful. And it's been, you're one of those people that I really like to speak to. First of all, you have the same background that I do. So I'm a marketing guy. This is what I do. I'm not a real estate expert. I'm not a broker, right? I'm just a marketing guy trying to understand real estate. And your history really connects to a lot of the things that I'm doing today. I think what's interesting for me the most before we dive into what you're doing at Kassman Capital Group is what triggered this change? Like, what was this big move? You've had such a great career in a lot of very big companies. Like, you should see this guy's LinkedIn profile. It's insane. And then all of a sudden you're doing this real estate thing for the past 7 years. Like, how does that happen?
There were two really big pivotal moments that drove it. The first was I was at General Motors on the client side doing some great campaigns, working on some great projects. But that was in 2007, 2008, 2009. Many of your listeners know that that's when we had the last recession. And that is when, you know, my company, General Motors, went into bankruptcy. So every day I was faced with watching my leadership on the news and talking about the state of our business, and it made everyone a little anxious about our futures. And one of the things that I decided at that time was I wanted to take that control back into my own hands. Your real estate provided a pathway to do that. Fast forward a few years, I had started investing in real estate, had a small portfolio, but now I'm working for a smaller advertising agency. We blew up, we grew exponentially, grew a little too fast. And that firm actually ended up going under and filing bankruptcy as well. So I actually never lost my job. I was paid the entire time. But you can imagine what I must have felt, you know, being at this agency. I started investing specifically so that if I were ever faced with this challenge again, I was prepared. And what I realized is that while I was investing in real estate and it was certainly providing a little bit of a cushion, I was nowhere close to replacing my income. So I needed to have a different strategy for real estate investing. And that's where the idea of syndication really came into play. And I was already thinking about it. And really, syndication is a fancy word for saying we're going to pool capital together from other people to buy a property, because I was, you know, buying properties by myself. My wife and I were saving our money buying a property, saving our money buying a property. And we were trying to figure out, well, how do we actually scale this? How do we grow it? And when that second company went into bankruptcy, I realized that I really needed to stop thinking about scaling. And I really started to take action to do that. So that led me into the real estate syndication space, working with other investors, and ultimately buying larger apartments.
Yeah, I've seen you have a big number right there. I don't remember the full number right here on your website, but it's 1,223 units so far, right?
Got to be updated, but yes.
So, this is you took an amazing route that I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs do, this shift from a different industry to your industry. Like, it's usually a special story, something about the 08, 09 crash, or something about being trying to feel a little bit more financially stable or confident to handle those types of financial crashes. And, you know, talking about a financial crash, it's not 08, it's not 09, but we are going through something right now that is becoming very significant to a lot of players in the market, specifically in commercial real estate. We're seeing a lot of shifts and movements. It was triggered by, you know, a lot of global events, but obviously interest rates that went up that are supposed to kind of stop the inflation has risen a lot of challenges on the real estate side, right? Deals that used to add up or underwrite properly are not adding up today. And there's a bit of a struggle. On the other hand, there's a lot of opportunity. What are you guys doing in Kasman Capital Group today? Or what are you doing specifically yourself on a personal level to deal with this type of situation? And we'll drill down into those questions later also.
Well, our fundamentals haven't changed. You know, real estate investing, and specifically when it comes to multifamily and apartment investing, it really comes down to cash flow, right? Buying properties that cash flow in desirable locations. Now, how people measure that is always different and the assumptions they make. But for us, we've always placed a strong emphasis on in-place cash flow and stabilized cash flow. I think that really helps us to, you know, position ourselves well in the marketplace. You know, we try not to focus on areas that are so hot that there's strong competition and we're making assumptions that the market's going to be a certain thing in the future. We would love for the market to be better in the future, but we don't bank on that. So that, I think, gives us a little bit of flexibility in the marketplace. We are in the Midwest, as I mentioned before. In the Midwest doesn't tend to go quite as high in value when times are great, but it also doesn't drop as low when times get a little tough. People who live in the Midwest want to live in the Midwest. They were born and raised here, families here. They're not chasing careers. You know, they live here because this is where they want to be. So we like the stability and the predictability that comes from investing in this region. And I think that provides a lot of great opportunities. As far as things we're looking at differently or, you know, positioning ourselves for, I think the biggest thing is just watching and having conversations, you know, talking to industry professionals, talking to our peers, talking to those folks who will have access or will have information about those deals that will come on the market here. So we want to make sure that we're prepared. We're talking to our potential partners. And if anybody is interested in investing and being a part of that, we're happy to talk to them as well so that they can, you know, see the opportunities we're seeing and be a part of this next wave of the cycle.
Yeah. And I feel like, people sometimes don't really understand how deep this goes, right? There's some people call the next 3 years like the great reset. You know, there's a lot of assumptions out there. No one here is an oracle who knows how interest rates is going to look like, how debt solutions are going to look like. So no one really knows exactly where it's going. But like you said, it real estate is real estate, right? It's like if you believe in the Apple stock, you invest in the Apple stock, you hold it for a long time because the company is great. Same thing goes for real estate. And yeah, it's super interesting to see how companies are taking this on and the different things that they're doing. What do you think you guys are doing that is, I would say, unique or different than other people in the multifamily space who are also focusing on, let's say, the Midwest?
You know, I'm not as familiar with what everyone else is doing. What I would say is we try to stick to our core values and our fundamentals. So for us, again, to focus on both in-place cash flow and stabilized cash flow, understanding our business plan, understanding our downside protection and mitigating risk as much as possible. That's key for us. I would also say that we also focus on desirable locations. You know, it's interesting because some people, they think about cash flow and they run to the highest cash flow numbers possible. That is simply not our strategy. You know, we are not looking to invest in D-class locations. We want to invest in desirable locations. We want to be in places where people want to live, where people can afford to pay rent. We just want to do it in markets where it's affordable and there's not as much, you know, built up demand where it's almost unsustainable. So that's really important for us. So it's a little bit of a balance, but I think what we do, it's about finding those opportunities that are unique, but give us flexibility in the marketplace. And I would say too, like one thing that we try to strive is making sure we have great relationships with our partners. You know, as you mentioned, the times are changing. We may not be able to sell deals in 3 years, right? We may have to stay in them for 5 or 6 years. I want to make sure investors understand that. You know, yeah. I'd love to, you know, flip the money and give it back to you. But the reality is we may need to do what's best for the deal and best for everyone long term. And that's the viewpoint we're going to take.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's if you're willing, let's try to take a peek behind this curtain just for other GPs that are either starting to get in the game right now or are in the game and kind of struggling. You talked a lot about desirable locations, right? About the best places to invest in. If you can give us a peek on how you guys look at locations or specific areas and say, this is desirable, this is not desirable. Like, what is the way that you do your research on these areas?
Yeah. So first of all, for us, we like to focus on a kind of two and a half hour range of Cincinnati. So for me, it's Cincinnati, Louisville, Indianapolis, Columbus. Those are the markets I'm focused on. I tell everyone, look at your backyard, look at where you have access to, where you can build some strong broker relationships and you can get some deal flow. So that's the first thing. When it comes to the actual market, we're looking at metrics like population growth, job growth, industry diversification. I want to know the ease of doing business. I want to understand if there are any economic policies that are, you know, attracting new businesses, if there are any tax breaks or anything like that that's going to spark business growth. What we also pay attention to, and this is what's going to crush people in 2024, we want to understand what's coming to the marketplace in terms of multifamily, right? How many new units are being built? What's the overall demand? What is the net absorption rate for this area? If you're in a market that's in, you know, it's in demand and people want to live there, but the developers are already building, you know, thousands and thousands of new units, well, that's going to crush demand for your existing housing supply, right? It's going to be really hard to drive up rents if you have so many new units coming on the marketplace. So for us, we are in markets where it's typically cost prohibitive to build brand new B-class properties. So we do not focus on the A-class landscape. We are really focused on B-class, C-plus type properties. And because of that, we have kind of a niche carved out for us. So when we're focused on that space where there isn't a, you know, an overwhelming amount of new supply coming in the market, that gives us a nice sweet spot where we can go in, you know, make our renovations to the properties, drive rents for the folks who want that kind of product, and have a nice place where we can provide that in the marketplace.
Yeah, that's a pretty thorough peek. I hope people get the value from it that I was looking for. I think that you know, when I'm trying to look at areas, I don't know if you're I've been to Dallas. I don't know if you've been to Dallas lately. I've been to Dallas in the past, I think it was a year and a half ago. So it was crazy to see, like you talked about, like how many units are being built right now. And you know, I was walking the street to Midtown and it was completely full with buildings that are either being renovated or built in that area. And then you ask yourself, like, how many people are going to actually live here? And what's the risk of running those buildings in those areas? And I'm just very... I don't know. Are you walking the streets? Like, are you literally going to the neighborhoods and, you know, knocking on doors? Is that something that you've done before?
Starting out, I had more boots on the ground, right? I used to live in Chicago and I just had an inherent knowledge of the market from just driving around. You could see what's happening. You could see a coffee shop, you know, open up. Yeah. You could see, you know, Panera Bread or, you know, you could see Starbucks, whatever it is, right? You can see those things coming into an area. And you're like, ooh, that's interesting. They must have done a ton of research and decided this was a place that was going to be growing. One thing that I used to do, and I actually have a download on my website where it's, I think it's 30 hacks to find the best places to invest, the best submarkets. And one that I loved is really paying attention to the infrastructure. So again, in a larger city like Chicago, I would look at the train stops. And when they started adding new train stops, you already know those areas are poised for growth, right? Yeah. Because wherever there's a new train stop, they're going to add restaurants, you know, they're going to add coffee shops, libraries, all sorts of other things. And that's going to see a lot of development. People are going to want to live in those areas. I used to live in the West Loop before it was what people see it is today. And I mean, I knew it was coming. I wasn't a focused real estate investor at that time. I would have bought everything I could, but I could see how exactly that came to be. It started with the train stop announcement. Then Google came into the area. Restaurants soon followed. Facebook followed. Hotels follow, nightlife, all of this started to develop, and that real estate went up in value almost, you know, it felt like overnight to some people, but it was really about a 3-year period. And it was all very planned, and you could have got in front of it if you paid attention to the developments that were being announced.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, well, this is why you're doing acquisitions and investor relations, and because you understand that probably better than others, specifically in your area. And I've seen some of your projects. They look pretty cool, by the way. I'd love to learn more about them also. I'm going to deep dive into your website right after this. we focus a lot about the acquisition side, but let's talk a bit about investor relations side. And, you know, I've been talking to many LPs who have been investing either past or currently investing in real estate deals. And a lot of them have been raising concerns as to, you know, they're here, you open the news, right? You hear the Fed is taking the, you know, interest rate up or interest rate down, or it's the highest it's been in whatever, 20 years. Or like, what are you telling investors that are concerned about that? And they're coming to you and saying, hey, why should I invest for the next deal?
Well, first of all, I think every deal is different. You know, just like we talk about real estate being local, every deal is different. I want to understand the business plan for that specific deal. When I'm talking to investors, I think the very first thing they've got to make a decision on is whether or not they like and trust the person they're talking to. You know, if you don't trust that operator, if you don't like that operator, you shouldn't even think about the deal, right? Get to know the person. Who are you looking to do business with? What is their character? What is their experience? Are they capable? You know, do they have a strong sense of the markets that they're investing in? You want to understand that. Who's the team, right? Who else is on the team? That's what you've got to figure out first. From there, you can get specific questions about the market, interest rates. They can answer all that. And what I'm listening for is, how are they thinking about it? Are they hoping interest rates come down, or do they have a plan in place to navigate the landscape no matter what happens to interest rates? You know, I've got two different deals, one that had a variable loan and one that had a fixed loan. The fixed loan, we don't have to do anything. We've got 10 years left on that loan. I'm not worried about what happens with the interest rates from that standpoint. We also have the ability to add a supplemental loan. So on a deal like that, we're laying out the facts, because the interest rate environment, it doesn't impact our operations. What it could impact is what someone's willing to pay for it in the future, whether or not they want to assume our loan or they want to bring in a new loan, right? But their investment's not going to be impacted as far as the day-to-day operations and cash flow based on the interest rates. On a different loan where we have a variable rate, well, it is more impacted. There, though, we have higher upside potential because we're driving renovations and we're pushing rents from $930 up to $1,500, right? Wow. And we didn't even underwrite to that. We underwrote to $1,200. Wow. So we're getting $300 incremental than what we underwrote. On top of that, we have a rate cap in place, right? So we have that cap. So we kind of know, hey, worst case scenario, we're paying this interest rate and then we're getting reimbursed on our cap. Even with that plan, we wanted to go ahead and refinance because we just didn't want to wait and get to the end of our existing term and then try to figure out and guess where the rates were going to be. So I think for anyone who's concerned, you just want to ask more questions to understand, hey, what's the plan? How are you looking at it? What decisions are you looking to make? And then what triggers are going to drive your decision making? Are you waiting for rates to hit a certain number? Are you waiting for a certain time frame? What exactly are we looking at so that you can make decisions? And you want to make sure that you feel comfortable with the people you're working with. And the truth of the matter is, the time to ask these questions is before you invest, so you can get to know them, right? And really when there's not a deal on the table, so you can understand how they think in general, but then also let's make sure we understand how their deals have performed, not so much just on cash on cash and all that, but I want to understand how they made those decisions on those deals and why they made those decisions at that time.
So first of all, thank you for sharing all this and your knowledge. I know that people appreciate that a lot. And it gives them a peek of who you are and what your company is. But always in my episodes, I do the last piece is something I call a shameless plug, right? I try to keep the episodes short and snappy. So I add this shameless plug at the end. So just, this is where you can, you know, you have the opportunity to talk about your current investment opportunities, what you're working on today, what are you looking for in the market? We've had a lot of connections happen through this podcast behind the scenes. So I think it's a really good opportunity for you to just shamelessly talk about what you're doing and what you're looking for.
Well, I think there's a couple things, right? So for your listeners here, I think the very first place I would start is with our sample deal package. If you are looking to be an active investor and raise more capital for your deals, it helps to understand the kind of information that you want to communicate. If you are a passive investor or want to be an LP, it helps to understand the terminology and some of the information that you should be looking for in these deals. So we put together a sample deal package to address some of those things. We actually follow that up with our top seven questions to look for in a deal offering. So you can go to our website, chasmancapital.com/sample deal, and you can check that out there. On top of that, if you're listening to this, I know you like podcasts. So check out our podcast, Multifamily Insights. We've done almost 600 episodes at this point of this show. So lots of great information all about multifamily investing. So you definitely want to check out that show anywhere you listen to podcasts.
No, this is great. And all the links to your podcast and to your website are going to be linked in the bio. John, this was a great episode. Thank you so much for joining us on The Dealmakers on another episode of The Dealmakers.
I love it. Hey, thank you for having me. Great talking to you and look forward to staying connected.
Thank you for joining us. Check out more episodes on The Dealmakers podcast available on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, and Agora's website at agorareal.com/podcast. See you in the next episode.